This is Hassling the Paranormal. I'm your host, Jason Hassler. I'm the director of Big River Paranormal, the Oregon team for the Atlantic Paranormal Society. I've been obsessed with the paranormal since having unexplained experiences as a child. These experiences left me with more questions than answers. Join me as we explore all things paranormal with some of the top specialists and experts in the paranormal community. I'm your host, Jason Hassler. I'm here in the KXR Dose today, lucky enough to have Mike Clacy. How are you doing today, Mike?
Good. How are you?
So I'm doing really well. So you are a country music artist. How long have you been doing country music?
Been doing country music for 25 years. Well, I should say I did karaoke for a long time. And then mom, before she passed, said, you need to go on The Voice.
Yeah.
And I kept saying no. And then she goes, you need to go on American Idol. And I said, no, because I'm too old. But I eventually went to The Voice, got pretty far in that, and then got signed with Warner Records. And
nice.
Yeah.
What was the voice like? Were you nervous, or were you like, I got this?
Oh, yeah.
Or,
yeah. Even though you've did this for years, you're always nervous because of the judges are.
Is that the one where the chair turns around on?
Yep. Yeah.
Did you get chairs and all that?
Yeah, four chairs.
So who was the host when you were there?
It was 2020. So yeah. Blake Shelton, Kelly Clarkson, Adam
Levine,
and then I can't remember who the third one was.
I haven't watched it in years, so I probably don't
remember. It's been a while, and I'm old and I forget things.
So here you are, a country music singer, and you've got one of country music's biggest stars, Blake Shelton.
Yes.
And what was that like?
He actually is the one that signed me.
Wow.
Yeah, we became good friends. We still are good friends.
He
Kelly
seems
Clarkson
like an interesting
and I are good
guy.
Friends. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So after The Voice, you didn't win The Voice, but
no.
But you got far enough. How far did you get? Do you remember? Like, was there like a?
It was like to the right before you go and do your double singing in the finals.
Yeah.
To like compete with your other with the other artists.
So what happens exactly once you get kicked out of the show? What happens then?
So you can still get deals.
Yeah, obviously.
And
yeah.
To be honest, it's kind of a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're gonna go what? So, but I can because I'm not part of them anymore.
Yeah.
But if you make it, you lose 30% of everything you do the rest of your music career because they take 30% of everything.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of a nice thing.
Yeah. I mean, look at Adam Lambert. Losing was the greatest thing that ever happened to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, now he's running around with Queen. So.
Yeah. But they still, they put you in touch with other record labels. But I got lucky. Blake, and he was part of Warner, and he signed me. So
cool. So you've been around the country singing all over, you opening for anybody famous?
Oh, yeah. So I was on tour 6 years ago when Jelly Roll first started.
Oh, cool.
So it was with him, Jesse Howard. Well, did a couple things with Jesse Howard, I should say. And then Struggle Jennings.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah. But I've sang with Chris Stapleton actually at Ridgefield Amphitheater.
Wow.
Willie Nelson, I was part of the Outlaw Music Fest.
Yeah. Was that this year or last year?
Last year. Yeah. Yeah.
What's next for you?
So I have a big, it's been all a little bit smaller tours.
Yeah.
So we've got Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah.
We have Red Rocks. Madison Square Garden, and then we have I think Rednecks and Paychecks and Floribama and stuff like that.
All right. So if people want to know more about your music, where can they find that?
www.mikeclacy.com.
And out of all the music you've done, what is your favorite song that you've done personally?
So my favorite song is Life's End, actually. Chilling in the POW, of course, because it's over here.
Yeah.
But Life's End is pretty much the one that kind of touched and...
So, we got some local radio stations here that aren't playing your music yet.
Yes.
So, what can you say to them?
Play my music.
Play my music.
It's all about, I'm kind of supportive of local artists.
Yeah.
And you know, if your radio station's in that state, play your local artists because that helps them get bigger and better.
Exactly.
And, you know,
especially when you already have the recognition from the TV show. And that
absolutely.
It really makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I reached out to you a couple weeks ago and I said, hey, send me some songs so I can play on my radio show. And then you went in the studio and made a whole song.
Yes.
I was pretty impressed. I got to admit,
thank you.
I'm not a huge country music fan. I'll be honest.
Yeah.
But even I was impressed.
Thank you.
And I've sent it to a few of my friends who are big country music fans. And they were like, holy crap.
Thank you.
Who's this guy?
Yeah.
So
writing came easier with me in the last probably year.
Yeah. Because
most of the songs that are coming out were like 4 or 5 years ago in the process.
Okay.
And now I got a new producer, which is amazing.
Yeah.
He can do anything as fast as you want. Wow. But it comes out good. He's very picky.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's awesome.
But I told him I needed to do it, and then he picked the track, and
wow,
we just went from there.
Yeah, you had it in like 24 hours. I was like, holy crap.
We worked all night. We were up. There was no sleep during that day.
I sincerely appreciate it. I'm definitely going to be using that as my intro music from now on.
Absolutely.
So you said, let me ask you, when you were writing the song, did you do any research for like, or did you just already know about paranormal
stuff?
So
I know about paranormal because that's pretty much all I watch.
Yeah.
Food Channel, paranormal, and car shows.
Do you have a favorite paranormal TV show?
Not really. I think they're all good. The new, so the Expedition Unknown, how they kind of did the offset of that.
Yeah.
That's kind of not my thing.
Yeah. It's you just, can't have Josh Gates without Josh Gates.
Yeah. And the two that do it are good, but
they're
just not up on what they need to do.
Yeah, I don't watch very much anymore because for two reasons. One, I get mad because they have a bigger budget than I have for traveling.
Absolutely.
And they have all the fancy equipment.
Yeah.
And then I get mad because I can't go into the same places they go to because I don't have the budget.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and that's frustrating because like yours, we can actually go.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I want to do. I want to go to these places.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in Gettysburg, we sat in the Gettysburg Park at the Covered Bridge.
Yeah.
And it was, whoa.
I haven't been to Gettysburg yet, unfortunately. So TAPS every year or so, depending on health conditions, we have a what's called a TAPS family union. And, and they go, all the TAPS teams from the United States will meet up at a certain place. And last year it was at Gettysburg. And because I was broke, I didn't go. But it's a lot of fun, from my understanding. Some of my teammates went, and they had a great time. And
there's some really crazy stuff you see.
So I would,
and it's real.
I will definitely be going to some eventually.
Yeah,
I've got to start making some more money. And
when I go to Gettysburg next time to sing, I'll take you with me.
That sounds good. Yes. That'd be a great time. All right, so we're gonna go ahead and play the song that you did for me. Can you tell me what the name of the song is? Paranormal Trails. Was that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. All right, we're gonna go ahead and play that. Thank you for coming on.
Yes.
Dust on the dashboard, moon hanging low. Radio static fades where the back roads go. Thermal cam lens glows on the pylon edge. Old abandoned ports where the floorboards bend. EMF meal spikes on the cracked old grill. Whisper of a name that the wind won't tell. I grip the cold middle of the worn out gauge. Breath hangs thin in the arm haze. No call for miles, no distant light, just the home of the dark and the quiet night. Haunt the echoes that the litter left behind. Haunt the edges where the shadows don't mind. Country dark on the other side of the pines. Ghosts on old hymns on the woman's side. No fear in the steady beat of my heart. Tracking the strange in the dark. Cobwebs catch the beam of my old head limb. Footprints fade where the damp grass is dim. A rocking chair sways with no one to push. Faint smell rose where the dead bush stood. I call out soft, don't mean no harm. Just looking for the story that the dark keeps warm. No sudden scream, no spook that shock. Calm as the river that runs past the rock. Haunt the echoes that the living left behind. Walk the edges where the shadows don't mind. Dark on the other side of the pines. Those humbles my shoe, I smile slow. I know you're here. Ain't no such thing as empty clear. Every old cabin, every overgrown lane holds a soft ghost that won't ever wane. I pack my gear as the first light bleeds. Got a new spot to check when the dark succeeds. Paranormal trails on the country, man. Calm as I wander where the spirits lay.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back with more Hassling the Paranormal after a word from our sponsors.
The Columbian in Southwest Washington continues to offer the most comprehensive and consistent coverage of our region and our people, despite the challenges faced by local newspapers nationwide. Valued donations to our community-funded journalism project via the Local Media Foundation pays for local reporters to provide expanded and in-depth coverage of key local issues in print and online, including homelessness, transportation, and the environment. For the most thorough daily coverage, visit Columbian.com. Please consider donating or subscribing today.
Shriners Children's has opened a new pediatric orthopedic clinic in Vancouver. The clinic offers evaluation and follow-up care for children and teens with orthopedic conditions, including sports-related injuries. Care is available regardless of a family's ability to pay. Details about the Vancouver clinic are at shrinerschildrens.org/Vancouver Clinic.
Welcome back to Hassling the Paranormal. I'm your host, Jason Hassler. Today's guest is Derek Condit, author, hypnotherapist, and psychic medium, among other things. You have a lot of titles I read on your bio. What title do you prefer when people talk about you?
I don't really have a preference one, but, you know, paranormal experiencer, I guess, because I've had such a wide array of experiences.
What led you into your interest in the metaphysical and in paranormal world?
I was kind of thrust into it, to be honest, Jason, because it was during, I guess, the more interesting stuff happened when I was a Washington State correctional officer. Oh. And I wasn't researching it or anything. I just kind of started having experiences. So it kind of went on from there.
Yeah. So you're a Washington State correction officer and a psychic medium at the same time. What was that like being in a prison with those kind of abilities?
Yeah. And that whole psychic medium part kind of enhanced or became active while I was an officer. So I didn't have that title, so to say, when I started there, but it kind of enhanced being there in that environment. Actually, right now, as we're talking about it, my ears started ringing, which is one of the, you know, I'll just say psychic senses that kick in. And yeah, it was a really eye-opening in many ways, you can say.
Yeah. Did you find that it helped you or hurt you more in the field?
It definitely helped me more because then I was more aware of what was going on. For example, if I was working a certain night, because I worked graveyard shift for almost 16 years in maximum security, that it would give me a whole lot more insight on what was happening with the inmates at the time.
Yeah.
And realizing that a lot of the stuff they would talk about was real and it wasn't just in their heads.
Yeah. Yeah. What kind of things were they talking about?
Well, for example, sometimes I would work in the what's called the special offender unit, where they would have people that were diagnosed with things like schizophrenia. And then after my psychic sight came on, I would start being able to look at the individuals, the inmates, and see, I'll just say it started as a hazy figure above them. And I'd realize that, well, wait a minute, they're actually talking to someone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of, you know, interesting from my perspective when I'd never researched any of that.
Did you tell anybody about that or was that something you kept to yourself?
No, I definitely kept it to myself, at least while I was an officer. Because, you know, I had to wrap my head around it first because it kind of came on pretty quickly and then enhanced progressively as the time went on. So, no, I kept it to myself between just me and I didn't want to tell the officers or the inmates.
No, yeah, that's probably a good idea, especially in that line of work. They probably would have thought you were crazy like they did then.
So, yeah, exactly.
So when did you admit to yourself that this is actually a thing and then let other people know that you were having these abilities and things?
So what kind of kicked it off, and it's going to sound maybe a little bit odd, but believe it or not, a mineral called shungite is actually what kind of activated me. And just kind of in quickly, when I received my first piece, I ordered off the internet, had no idea about it, felt unusual, I guess all those terms fit, but pulse of energy go through me. And then I really, now that I've done over 1,000 readings, I call it a sense and not an ability.
Yeah.
So that mineral heightened that sense that we all have. And it kind of went from there. And then again, I was an officer at the time, so I had to kind of wrap my head around it.
So, how did you find out about this mineral that you found? And you, of course, you wrote the book about it as well. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, and that was actually that kind of ties into intuition as well, because I'm a gold prospector as well, a rock hound, all sorts of things. So I was just researching rocks and minerals, and then all of a sudden, this little black rock that's called shungite just kept appearing, kept coming up. And not just if I was on Facebook, let's say, to where they're monitoring everything and stuff, and they hear you talking and all that kind of stuff. It came in various different avenues around me. So I thought, and I at least at that point I knew if some it's not coincidence. So if something came up that many times, that there was some point or reason behind it. So I ordered that one piece from Karelia, Russia, where shungite's actually found, and then had my experiences from there. So it was really intuition. It wasn't a person that introduced it to me.
So is it, it's just something that helps enhance your abilities and that kind of thing. Some people say that they use it for protection against like electromagnetic fields and that kind of thing. Do you believe in that?
Well, yeah, actually, I know it's a thing. And I've actually built a whole website called cosmicshungite.com where I've actually provided all these scientific studies that people can read. Because I'm more of a science geek initially than the paranormal stuff until I was thrust into it. And so it not only has been proven to do that, but I have my firsthand experiences and now many thousands of people through my store here in Mount Vernon that have had the same experience. And it does. So it basically, you can word it lots of ways, but it removes excess and overage energy. And these are just my terms that I like to use, which is those stresses and anxieties. And then when you remove those, your psychic intuition enhances.
So as a paranormal investigator, one of the things that we look for a lot is places with a high EMF, because obviously they can have bad effects on people. It can make you even hallucinate and see things that sometimes it make you feel sick and like you're being watched and all that kind of stuff. So sometimes that's a logical explanation for things when people call us. Would you recommend somebody that was having issues with that because they're sensitive to it get some of that mineral?
I absolutely would. So actually, I don't even know how many doctors at this point. Not that you have to be a doctor to recommend it, but I don't even know how many now that recommend their patients to come to my location. It's called Bigfoot's Gems in Mount Vernon, and that's where I sell the shungite, and it's just immense the effects that they have. And then again, the doctors that recommend it for personal, of course, you can say energy aspects, but everything's energy. But it helps you physically as well. And again, I love the fact that it was scientifically proven to have an effect on all of those aspects.
That's interesting. So, how much do you need to order? Would you, is it just something you like carry in your pocket or have around your house, or how does that work?
Yeah, and I know I realize that this is a radio show, so it's just gonna be audio, but at least you'll see here as we're chatting that I'm actually wearing a couple shungite bracelets and actually have a pendant on too. So it's not a volume thing with shungite. So it's not that you have to have 50 pieces in your pocket for it to affect you. It can be one nugget. That's plenty to have an immediate effect on people.
Interesting. I'm gonna have to get some of it and try it out for some of our clients and stuff that's having, and we have team members that have they're sensitive to high EMF and stuff, and maybe that could help them, because a lot of times if we enter a situation where there is high EMF from bad wiring or something at a place, sometimes we have teammates that have to actually step out because it gives them headaches and that kind of stuff. So maybe that would be helpful for us, especially for the clients if they're experiencing that kind of thing.
Oh, it would absolutely be helpful. You'd want it on your electronics too. So anything that communicates, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, the 5G devices, all that stuff. But if you have it on your person, it's again, I like to reference the scientific studies because they've done studies and they've replicated this particular one I'm going to tell you a little bit about. But they've shown that just by having shungite on you, be it in a pendant or a bracelet or something like that, it not only restores your cortisol levels, which is your stress hormones, but also your heart rate variability and eardrum temperature. So if you talk on a cell phone, that affects all of those parts of you physically, and shungite helps you energetically not only recover from those, but get stronger because of it.
Do they know what it is about it that does that, or they just know that it does?
No, they absolutely know. And it's all about a molecule that's found inside of it called carbon 60, or sometimes people know it as a fullerene or a buckyball. And it's been known about for a long time, and they're even replicated. I have a couple, believe it or not, NASA scientists that buy some of my shungite products, And they've started their own product line where they replicate or make carbon 60 themselves in the lab, because actually it's the most abundant molecule in the universe, but it's in space. It's not made down here, which is why it's believed that Shungite's a meteorite.
So I wanted to ask you about, you're a hypnotherapist. Can you explain exactly for people who haven't heard of a hypnotherapist before, what exactly that is and what you do with that?
Yeah, really the whole hypnotism thing, it's really just a way of talking somebody into a heightened state of suggestibility. So it's not that you're convincing them to do anything. They're completely aware the whole time. So I want to remove some of those misconceptions on it. But what it does is open them up, not only emotionally, but logically, and again, suggestibility, so that they can either get through certain, traumas maybe they've had in life, or you can get into such a state that, like, I've done what's called past life regressions as well. So you can do things like that. So it's not even all, I'll make fun of it, woo-woo stuff. It's actually just helping the person open up more to what they already are aware of or know.
Can you talk about the purpose of a past life regression?
Yeah, and those vary because I've done so many sessions now, and sometimes I blend them with the sessions I do, and I can do them remote or in person, either way, with it be it hypnotherapy or this. And I kind of, shy away from the psychic medium term, but that's a term everybody knows because, again, I like the word intuition and everybody has it, but that can be heightened. So when I do the past life regressions, I never know what I'm getting into. I have no idea if, and often, believe it or not, Jason, a lot of the people don't even believe in the past life thing. And from all my sessions now, I really kind of term it as a concurrent life rather than a whole linear time thing. So it's more like they're all happening at once because the person can recall individuals, items, places, all sorts of things when I have a session with them. So it kind of goes all over the board.
Are you able to view your past life and that kind of thing?
I am, but now because again, and I'm just going to stick with the term that everybody knows, the psychic medium part, because that has enhanced so dramatically for me, I can actually, and the Shungite, I'll have to kind of preempt it with this. Shungite has helped me on my vision. So some people or cultures see it, call us seers, but I actually get to see, as I would word it, off the visual spectrum. So I not only get to communicate with entities or spirits or souls, whatever term somebody's comfortable with, but I get to perceive them and see them. And because that started, yeah, I get to do that. And I don't care if it's me talking to somebody about their past life or a current life, and the person doesn't have, and so in my army, MX Army as well, we would call it remote viewing when I was there. But here, it's a whole lot more than remote viewing, it's remote perceiving. Another term I had to kind of come up with just to, have people wrap their head around it. But no, those entities exist. This is just a vehicle.
So, what led you down the path of becoming a hypnotherapist, and how do you become one?
Yeah, and actually, you have to go through state certified training, and it takes, depending on where you go, but months of training by a certified, hypnotherapist instructor, and I did mine up in Bellingham, and I really got into it because I was looking for additional routes. Again, it was in the days, we'll just say, when my psychic senses started heightening and becoming a thing. So I thought, well, what the heck? I guess this is all real. And I had no idea. So then I looked for other avenues, and hypnotherapy was one of them, to where I could glean more information from clients and or myself, just to kind of, again, give me a way of talking about it and describing it, kind of thing.
So is the past life regression something that they taught you to do, and or they just gave you the skills to learn to do it, and you just had to progress on your own?
Yeah, so I guess we'll call the past life regression one of the recipes on the menu of hypnotherapy. So I didn't specifically get trained in that. I had the general hypnosis and hypnotherapy training that gets into many aspects. And then I opted after the fact to go ahead and add on what I'm calling a recipe. It's not called a recipe, of course, but add on that part because I was already, very aware of it, that it was a thing after all my psychic medium sessions. So then I thought, well, again, another way to expand into that understanding and talk to people that maybe weren't open to the term psychic, but they were open to hypnotherapy.
So how long have you been doing hypnotherapy?
Probably 6 years now or so, I'd guess. And I've been, again, what we call psychic for, I don't even know now, maybe almost coming up on 20 years.
Okay. And so you figured out how to mix those and help people with that. What exactly, when you first realized that you could do that kind of thing, how long did it take you before you believed in yourself and you're like, okay, I'm good enough to actually like do this for and charge people for it?
It probably I kept it kind of secret, other than with friends and family, for the first couple of years,
Yeah.
as that sense, that intuitive sense, heightened and it became more clear. And then my vision started heightening to where I could not only do the remote or past life regression stuff, but all of a sudden I would start, let for example, doing a session, and then and I term I use the word entity, and I don't mean ET when I say that necessarily, but a spirit or soul, somebody disincarnate. So then all of a sudden, I would do a session and I would start to visually see that person in my office or remotely. It makes no difference. And I'm like, wow, okay, well, I guess that's a thing. So other senses heightened. So then I just kind of blended it all together. And it's pretty immediate for me. It's just, I can pretty much just meet somebody and I get more input. Not, and everybody does to one degree or another. But granted, some are a little more heightened, or they learn about Shungite and they get even more heightened.
Is this something you can turn off?
I'll say turn it down, but no, I haven't been able to turn it off. So if I'm in, a place with a whole lot of people and there's a lot of what we would call stress and anxiety and things like that, and yeah, you can say that was a prison. Well, then it's, yeah, it's really heightened. And no, I couldn't at that point say, for example, walk through a unit or a cell block and not pick up on stuff because it was there all the time. But again, that was a good thing. Because then my what we call our sixth sense was heightened, and I knew, well, that guy doesn't have good intentions, or he's about to do this, that, or the other. And so I used it again as a sense, to help me benefit at any given time.
How did you tell the difference between what you're feeling with that and maybe your own personal feelings?
Yeah, and that took a little bit of honing to do. But I kind of word it this way when I do teach people to do this stuff, because I'll do that during a session. I'll say, realize first of all that your imagination is real. You just don't want to steer it. So often the intuitive sense comes in your own thoughts. It's not like it, and it has for me to where it's coming as another voice from something else. But typically it comes in real fast, real, I know I say fast, but subtly as well. And as long as you're not trying to directed or steer it, and it's usually something that's nothing you're thinking about it. So it's those real subtle thoughts that come in quickly initially, and then as I started realizing that and picking up and focusing on it, I realized, oh, I can just kind of, as I'll term it, relax and kind of chill out in my head and not worry about it. And then all of a sudden it would flow a little bit more, and then I knew it wasn't coming from me, because again, I don't know the people. It's usually I just get given a first, and not even a first name sometimes. And then they'll either sit down or again do a Zoom meeting or whatever, and I'll just give them their session. And then again from the feedback, it's just incredible. And it's not about me, it's about the sense. And again, that's what I like to tell everybody: we're all intuitive, every single one of us.
Do you feel as though everybody has the ability to, I guess, learn to do this?
Yeah, I do, and I'll admit that some people are more adept at it, I'll say. But I haven't seen anybody yet that doesn't have the, again, I guess we'll use the word ability, but I like the word sense as well. So yes, we're all born with that innate sense, but a lot of us have closed it down or just said, well, that was a coincidence, that was random, or something like that. And as we start getting past those little comments we often say in our head like that, well, then more of it starts coming in, because then a lot of those, again, as I worded entities and their past loved ones sometimes, well, then they realize, well, okay, then, and for me, example, then they'll go, okay, well, Derek's open to it, so we'll give him some more input. And then as you do that, it heightens.
With this past life regression, when you first started doing it, did you try to like do it on yourself first or your friends or anything like that? Or did you just jump right into, people you didn't know?
Yeah, no, I first started doing it with myself and friends and family members, and then clients, not hypnosis clients, because I was doing the psychic thing first. And then I had ones that already knew that, I was psychic, and they already had those type of sessions. So they go, well, let's try the hypnotherapy thing and see what you can bring out from that. And it kind of progressed from there.
Do you help people with like quitting smoking, losing weight, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, and I've actually released a lot of free YouTube videos on that because it's not all about money, it's about energy typically. So I can do things like that, from fear of driving to, smoking cessation to, not drinking or anything like that. But again, it's just getting somebody in that heightened state of awareness so they can make that decision themselves is really what it's doing. So I'm not convincing them of anything. It's just helping them, you can say convince, but open themselves up to not having that addiction or fear of whatever.
So can anybody be hypnotized, or is this something you really like? Obviously you can't hypnotize somebody if they don't want you to, but is there just some people that can't be hypnotized?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess the blunt answer would be yes, some can't be, but really it's at the level. So some can be, because you're never, when you're under hypnosis, you're never gone completely. You're always aware of what's happening to one level or another. So it depends on how open and willing that person is to reach a certain level of relaxation to where they just go with the flow. So of course you want that level of trust with a client so they know you're not gonna, tell them something like, sign over your bank, and you can't do this anyway, but sign over your bank account and things like that, because a lot of people are scared of that, or they've just seen hypnotists on stage where, they'll get you forget a certain number and things like, and yes, that can all be done, but it is relative to the person.
Have you done any stage work like that for like entertainment purposes?
I've done it for the psychic part, but not a hypnotist show per se, just because that wasn't really the avenue I wanted to go, because it kind of minimizes the benefits it can really be used for.
So you've done like what would like a gallery reading or a demonstration type of thing then?
Yeah, actually, I just did one the other night. I had six individuals that wanted me to come over to their private residence, and they all sat down and kind of relaxed and didn't, I didn't know any of their names. Just all of a sudden, I had three people in front of me, and they go, "Okay, psychic guy, sit down and do your thing, and tell me what you can do and read off of us." And it happens that fast. And I have no problem with a group or an individual doing it all at once.
Do you sometimes impress yourself with the things you can come up with?
Oh, yeah, I get amazed all the time because just how accurate it is. And to be totally honest, it can be an animal thing too, Jason. So, I mean, they can say, "Well, I've got this pet at home," and they'll just kind of stop there usually, because sometimes they're doing, test the psychic thing. And I'll say, "Okay, well," and I get to visually see it anyway, even if they just start thinking about it. So I go, "Oh, it's a horse," and then or whatever. And then I'll go into a reading on that individual as well. And yeah, so I get my mind gets blown all the time because of just the level of input that we're all able to do.
So say you're at the grocery store and there's a woman in line in front of you and there's a spirit with her that wants you to deliver a message. Would you do it?
Okay, yeah, I know there's a lot of psychics that do that, and I will on occasion. I'll just give you a vague example, so just in case the people actually I encountered the other night actually listen to this. There was a group on the side of the road, and I could see what they would term angels above them. And my wife kind of pointed it out to me. She goes, "Oh, there's a group over there," and I just kind of glance over, and I get to see again those figures above them. So I said, "Okay, well, that wasn't random." So I pull over in the parking lot and just walk up to them, give them a couple messages. I don't tell them who I am. I don't hand them a card and say, "Hey, come give me for a psychic session." Typically, they'll ask me, they go, "Where can we find you?" and this, that, and the other. But yes, if it's in, I'll just kind of word it this way. If it's an important thing like that to where they're trying to draw my attention, be it a past loved one or something else around them, yeah, I'll usually give a message, but I usually try and do it kind of incognito and not make a show of it or anything.
All right. So what inspired you to write the series of books, the triangle books that you wrote, the eight?
Yeah, those were a lot of fun because it actually ballooned into eight of them. And so I live up here and work in Skagit County, Washington. And then again, as my correctional officer days in Monroe at Washington State Reformatory, I started having so many of my own experiences. So initially, we'll stick with the Skagit one because that was the first book. And it was actually put out free as a PDF because I didn't know if anybody was going to be interested at all. It wasn't planned to be a book, but the fee on it was, "I need to have this in print form and send it to so and so." So I went ahead, and then again, I had so many experiences with everything from Bigfoot to UFOs that I thought, well, heck, I guess there are people that are interested. So the whole name was kind of a play off of the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah.
So I did my research up here, and I realized that all these stories and sightings and experiences kind of fit the triangle shape in Skagit County. So I thought, well, that's kind of convenient. So hence the name.
So are all the stories in there, like experiences you had or experiences people talked to you about, or?
It's kind of both. So that's a good question too, because a lot of the Seattle ones, and I do note in there that the which ones are mine directly, because a lot of my stuff was within the Seattle Triangle book, and a lot of them were also Skagit Triangle. But then I expanded it into everything from what's called, and I'm sure you're aware, Project Blue Book files. And then because I own a store called Bigfoot's Gems in Mount Vernon, well, just having a store with that name, people come in and they're immediately open to telling me their story. And I don't care if it's a local scientist or just your local, mom and pop to give me their stories or other forms. So then that's how the book started progressing.
Do you have plans for more?
I do, because now I've written them and they're all on Amazon, but I've gone from Alaska to Washington, Oregon, California, so the whole West Coast. And I'm from California, and I've lived in all these states myself, so a lot of them are my personal stories. But from the feedback I'm getting, and I've lived in other states as well, so I'm going to go ahead and probably just expand, for example, into Arizona and Louisiana, because I'm also a retired commercial deep sea diver. So I
Oh.
used to dive off oil rigs down in the Gulf, and I
Wow.
had experiences down there and in Arizona. So I thought, well, heck, I got a whole nother book in me from that. So I'm
Yeah.
kind of working on those in the background.
Have you ever thought about doing one for the Columbia River Gorge?
Oh, there's already, yeah. So I've already got some stories or segments written on a lot of these books in the background because I come across that information. And yep, that's definitely a spot where there's a lot of stuff.
Have you heard of the Klickitat ape cat?
No, I don't think I have.
Yeah, you have to check that out. There's a Josh Gates did a thing on it from Destination Truth. There's a gentleman named James Shubsky, and he owns Margie's Outdoor Store in Bingen, Washington. And what he does there is outdoor stories. He also takes reports of paranormal activity in the Columbia Gorge, and he maps them. And sometimes he investigates some of the stuff. And one of the sightings that people are having is this large cat, like almost like a cougar sized cat, but it's black and it's got a face of an ape.
Oh, you know what? That you are ringing some bells now. I don't think I was so familiar I could pinpoint the area, but I have heard vaguely of something like that. I'll definitely do some more research and see what I can find come up on that, and possibly include it in one of the next books.
It's a pretty interesting story. I guess people have been seeing this for many years there, and of course, you got the whole Columbia Gorge and the Mount Adams area and all that kind of stuff there. It's just crazy with Sasquatch and UFOs and all that stuff.
Yeah, I found out there's the Sasquatch stuff everywhere. I saw my first one in a town called Gold Bar, Washington, and then another one up in, and I don't know if you want to get into those stories or not, but another one up in Mount Baker area of Washington State as well.
I have not had a Sasquatch encounter yet. I don't know that I ever will, because I'll be honest, I don't spend a whole lot of time in the woods. But
Well,
it would be cool if I saw. I mean, like, that's the only way you can truly believe, right?
Yeah, I was open to it, so I wouldn't. I was a believer that it was possible until my first sighting, but I hadn't seen one. But I'll tell you too, you don't have to just go in the woods to see them, because my first sighting was on Highway 2 with probably at least a half dozen other vehicles behind me, and it was literally crossing the highway. Just kind of not, it's not the most exciting story, but it was crossing as I was headed into my graveyard shift. It ran across the highway and straight into the wood line, and all the cars behind me were swerving, so I knew they saw it as well. But yeah, you can see it outside of the woods.
What is your belief on Sasquatch? Do you believe it's a spiritual being, of something paranormal, or is it an animal, do you think?
Well, I'm going to put it this way, because of my now vast understanding and experiences, including my dad's experience, and he was a retired, so he used to be an NSA agent as well, and I didn't know that until a few years ago. And he was in California during his. But I'll tell you, it's not just a one thing. There's, you loosely call it a tribe, or I would really call it a people. And as far as the spiritual part, absolutely. That's a thing, because of just the unbelievable or paranormal aspects I experienced with my sighting up in Mount Baker, that I know there's that aspect to them.
Some people even believe they could be from a different planet and they're just visiting. So, I mean, there's all sorts of theories on Sasquatch, and I don't know which to believe, but I think they're all plausible and they're all fun to talk about. And it's kind of funny because I have attended several different Bigfoot events, and depending on who you're talking to, so some people don't even want to discuss the fact it could be something paranormal or spiritual. They only want to believe it's an undiscovered ape-like creature in the woods, which is, probably a lot. That would be a big problem, I think, if it was actually discovered, because then it would, they'd have to shut down the woods and all that from logging and everything till they figure that all out. And
Yeah.
when you get money involved and the government involved, it's going to be a mess every time.
Well, I've kind of yeah, no, that's a good point. I'll tell you, there's no way that our government doesn't know about these, because I absolutely know they're a thing now. And my dad and my multiple sightings, I even have a gifting experience from one of them that did something very unusual. So I know they're a thing. So again, from my perspective, of course, being out of the army as well, there's no way that, and I'll kind of put air quotes up here that nobody can see, that they don't know about them. So, and that means that there must be more to them than we think, because otherwise they could say, oh, it's just an endangered species and we'll give them this section of the woods, but they're not doing that. So there is a lot more to them.
I've even heard stories about the St. Helens eruption in 80 that people were seeing, military was seen escorting families of Sasquatch from the area and that kind of stuff. But who knows if those things are true, but there's definitely rumors and stories out there about that.
Oh yeah, well, up here in this part of Washington, we have a lot of Native American tribes, and I've had one of the elders come in and tell me about the story that his whole the gathering they were at, a family of there were three of them, family of Sasquatch, walked right through their whole, and everybody saw him. It wasn't like one person said, "Oh, I saw this," and it ducked away in the woods. No, it went right through there, through their gathering out in their on their land. So it was dozens of people seeing it, and that was it's nothing they could doubt. They would doubt for a second.
When you had your sightings, did you feel fearful or excited? How did it make you feel? I mean, were you not realize what you were seeing until afterwards? I mean, I think that's kind of where I would be, is like, I wouldn't realize till afterwards.
Well, and the first one was, again, I was open to it, but had never seen one, never thought for a second I would ever see one, especially driving my car to my correctional officer gig, and then all of a sudden seeing it. But no, I had no fear or anxiety or anything like that. And even my second sighting, which was when I was alone up on a trail in the Mount Baker area, where it was a whole lot more personal, and close up. No, and I thought that too. I thought, because I've come across bears, I've done a lot of hiking, and yeah, my anxiety heightens. You get a little bit of that fear going, but not when I had the Sasquatch experience. It was completely different. In fact, I don't even know how to explain, other than it felt like the entire world paused. So when it was there with me, it was dead silent. There was nothing going on, and not just dead silent, but I use the word pause specifically because that's what it felt like. There was just nothing else happening. It was really unusual.
Yeah, a lot of people talk about seeing them as almost like that, like a almost like a spiritual, thing. So I've always, I think it'd be interesting to have my own experience, but then again, also really scary. So who knows if I want to actually go out in the woods and experience that.
Yeah, I thought I would be scared too. Because again, I never go out there expecting, I don't go on Sasquatch hunts or anything like that or looking for them. It's just me doing my thing out there. And then all of a sudden, but when I do go out there, especially now, because I know the psychic thing is real and there's more to the world than, most people acknowledge, that I'm open to it. And I think that lets them know that I'm in such a state of being and it's not anxiety, that they're more willing to maybe share an experience with me, kind of thing.
What kind of things did you have in your book about Oregon?
Oh, Oregon. Yeah, the Oregon one was really, there's an Oregon underground. I'll tell you, even in Oregon and in the Portland area, there are, again, Sasquatch or Bigfoot sightings. There's all of that. And then really the biggest paranormal aspect of Oregon, and I've had multiple UFO sightings myself. I mean, straight up in your face with people with me sometimes. But yeah, the Oregon one was a whole lot of the what you would say ghost or UFO experiences from people that submitted stories or some research I did from, again, Project Blue Book and other locate or other sources as well. But that was the bigger realm that was happening down there.
My team is the TAPS family team for Oregon, so we do investigate a lot of reportedly haunted locations in Oregon. So it's There's quite a bit, but I would say there's a lot of Sasquatch and stuff too. But I heard Washington State is the highest for reported UFO sightings.
I don't doubt that one bit because I would see UFOs or, UAPs, depending on the term. Even when I was on, so for several years, for 6 years to be specific, I was the perimeter patrol guard at the prison on graveyard. So the guy in the truck that drives around the exterior trying to see if anybody's trying to break in or out, believe it or not, it goes both ways. And then I would see things like, well, straight up UFOs, sometimes a white object kind of floating in the, and usually about the size of a car in the hillside nearby. And one of them, I actually had to write in my logbook because it was so unusual, where I actually had three helicopters. And this story is in the Seattle Triangle book, but three helicopters, and it's a no-fly zone, I'll just tell you, over a prison. You don't get to fly over a prison. I don't care if you're military or government of any type. You don't, it's no-fly zone for a lot of reasons, but not on that night. Because when I saw that UFO, it came out of a hillside. I don't even know how that happened,
Oh,
but
wow.
it came out of a hillside. And then within minutes, there were three black helicopters that were unmarked. And remember, I was ex-military, so I know what Black Hawks are and this, that, and the other. And they were three in a line, but the unusual part was they were unmarked. And the really odd part, Jason, was the middle one, so the second one was silent. And I didn't know how to wrap my head around that one, but they flew direct. I have it on video. They flew directly over my V, and I was outside of my vehicle at the time because I was trying to record the UFO. And all of a sudden, the helicopters come flying over the prison again, where they shouldn't be. Normal helicopter, the first one, and they're not, I don't know, tens of feet in between each other, so really close, which was odd anyway. And then all of a sudden, when the second one came over me, I'm like, what the heck? There was no noise from it. And I still don't even know what the heck that was all about, but it was. And then the third one, it was normal. I could feel the rotor wash, I could hear it, and all of that. But I'll tell you, there is something to that. There is, I guess we'll call them silent helicopters.
Yeah, that would actually be a nice thing to
Oh, that'd be really nice to. I wish they were all silent like that. But yeah,
have.
it definitely grabbed my attention in a real unusual way.
With this new release of information when it comes to UFOs and that kind of thing by the Trump administration, do you think they're actually ever going to give us anything good, or they're just trying to distract us from other things?
I think it's going to be a slow rollout kind of thing because I'm actually surprised they're given as much video as they have because a lot of objects that I've seen in those UAP, as they call them, releases, I've seen the identical thing, be it either on my tank when I was in the army or out hiking in the woods up on, I'll just be specific, Iron Goat Trail up on the top of Highway 2, where I've seen with, I was with my daughter on that one, where an orb the size of a car was maybe 100 yards in front of us, just kind of slowly moving through the canyon. And on that one, I don't think I've put this out yet. The more unusual part was after we got a little, we saw the orb kind of coming through, it paused, and there was nobody in little windows waving us or anything like that. Yeah, it was literally just an unbelievable glowing ball or orb that kind of slowly progressed through the canyon doing its thing. And then within probably 15 minutes down the trail, not coincidentally, when we came up to an open spot in the woods on the trail, two fighter jets, I don't know where they came from, we could hear them coming. They weren't silent ones. They flew not just toward us, but over us, upside down, and made a cross over us, so low that we could see the pilots. It was that crazy of an experience. And nobody like was waiting in my car to ask me about it or anything like that when I got, because I didn't know what was happening. But I'll just tell you, it wasn't a coincidence or random that all of a sudden two fighter jets literally are inverted, so upside down. And when they cross over each other, go in those opposite directions, they're literally right above us. It was almost like they're trying to say, hey, we're here, we're looking too, or something like that. So that was a little odd.
I wonder how much of the stuff they're releasing and how much of the stuff that we see are actually things that our government has that we don't know about yet.
Oh, I'm sure that it's probably a mixture. I think some of it is ours, because again, I've had that silent helicopter experience. And then there's no way that, again, when those fighter jets flew over me, that they, it wasn't random that I just had that encounter as well. I mean, I even had a more personal one when I was in the military in Germany, believe it or not. So I think our government and which or other governments or black ops or whomever, they know a lot more than they're letting on to, because I do, and I know I'm not the only one.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that one day, I mean, eventually one day, aliens are just going to show up and they're not going to be able to deny it. So,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and
exactly.
hopefully they're nice to us. That's all I got to say.
I know, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, nowadays with the whole AI thing expanding, every a lot of people go, "Oh, that was AI generated," and this, that, and the other. So that's, yeah.
Yeah, and that's become a tough thing for us paranormal investigators too, because people are sending us all these videos, and AI is pretty easy to spot most of the time, but sometimes you see some stuff that you just don't aren't sure about.
Yeah, and I've done and gone on and hosted a few of my private paranormal investigations at a place called Northern State up here, and not just there, but other places. And I've got a lot of the ghost boxes, the communication devices, all sorts of things, and we get full-on communication through them, especially again being a psychic medium and completely open to it. I'll pick up on, again, well, we can say ghost, but I like the word entity. I'll pick up on one over there. So I'm like, oh, well, I can see somebody over there just kind of watching us. Let's go over there and see if they want to communicate. And then, I'm the only one that's seeing it, but that doesn't matter, because then I'll turn on the communication device, whichever one I'm using at the time, or EMF meters, all kinds of widgets. I'll make fun of it. And then they all get their input as well. So it's kind of fun to do it that way.
How do people find your books and more information about you?
Yeah, there's a all the books are available on Amazon right now, and they can it's again Alaska Triangle, Washington, Skagit, California Triangle, Central California. But really the place to find me would be a website called cosmicshungite.com, and that's where I release a lot of my interviews and information and stuff like that. So I have kind of a one place hub where they can also get shungite if they're interested in it.
Okay, so you can order that from you directly online.
Yeah, and I get it. And you want to be careful when you do order shungite, because you got to make sure you're getting real stuff. And it's only found in one location on the planet, and that's Karelia, Russia, which is where I get it directly from. And I run a nonprofit helping save the bees, because I'm a beekeeper, a treatment-free one. And the Russians found out I invented something called shungite beehives, which if you and ties this back to what you brought up earlier as far as the EMF and stuff, because if you take shungite paint, paint a beehive, it stops calling a collapse disorder. And I share all that information for free on the website as well for beekeepers.
Cool. So, what does it cost? Like Shanghai cost?
It's not even that expensive, really. I mean, you can ultimately buy a nugget. So think, I don't know, a piece, the size of a quarter dollar or something for, a dollar or two. So we're not talking about a huge. Now, when you start honing it and turning it into jewelry and stuff like that, it can go up a little bit, but we're not talking, gold and platinum prices. It's relatively cheap.
Yeah, that's cool. I definitely recommend people go check out your stuff and buy your books. And do you have any appearances or anything else you'd like to promote coming up?
Really, I do them quite often, and really the place to find all those would be back on that Cosmic Shungite website on the About Us page, because I've got some TV spots on there where I've done different interviews on sometimes hypnotherapy, but a lot of it the psychic stuff, and where I was on Children's Health Defense Network here relatively recently, to where they had me on talking about Shungite and how just what we're talking about, it can help you remove those harmful energies or frequencies from your own environment.
Interesting. All right. Well, it's been great talking to you, and we'll chat again sometime, hopefully.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Jason. It's been a blast.
Support for KXRW Vancouver comes from On Point Removal Services. On Point Removal Services is a Vancouver, Washington-based junk removal service that proudly serves all of the Clark County area and beyond. Offering residential, office, and construction junk removal, On Point will do all of the loading, pickup, hauling, and cleanup on your project. And On Point is fully licensed and insured. For more information, visit their website at onpoint-removal.com.
KXRW programming is made possible by the generous support by David Dansky with David's Toys, buyer and collector of old toy trains, including Lionel, Flyer, Ives, and Marks. He is interested in buying old transportation-related toys as well as toy trains from the late 1800s to the 1960s. David offers appraisals for fellow toy train lovers as well. David's Toys can be reached at 360-576-1602. That's 360-576-1602.
Dust on the dashboard, moon hanging low. Radio static fades where the back roads go. Thermal cam lens glows on the pylon edge. Old abandoned porch where the floorboards bend. EMF meal spikes on the cracked old rail. Whisper of a name that the wind won't tell. I grip the cold middle of the worn out gauge. Breath hangs thin in the arm haze. No car for miles, no distant light. Just the hum of the dark and the quiet night. Want the echoes that the litter left behind. Want the edges where the shadows don't mind. Country dark on the other side of the pines. Ghosts on old hymns on the one hand side. No fear in the steady beat of my heart. Tracking the strains in the dawn. Cobwebs catch the beam of my old headlamp. Footprints fade where the damp grass is dead. Rocking chair sways with no one to push. Face Melrose where the dead bush stood. I call out soft, don't mean no harm. Just looking for the story that the dark keeps warm. No sudden scream, no spook that shock. Calm as the river that runs past the rock. Caught the echoes that